by many of us are going shopping for Reuven Esrog today or in the next couple of days, hopefully. So I thought we'd just give a little bit of an overview as to some of the basic things that one should be familiar with when looking for Reuven Esrog. So rather than talking about one particular topic, one particular psalm, we'll try to give a very, very quick synopsis of some of the important things to be aware of when buying a Dalad Minim. So we'll start with the Esrog. So the din is, of course, the Mishnah tells us, the Gemara elaborates upon, that Esrog has to be beautiful. According to some Rishonim, it's learned out from Hidur Mitzvah, other Rishonim, it's a din of Hodor, whatever the Mokhmer is, the bottom line is, there's a din in the Torah that an Esrog has to be a certain degree of beauty. There are certain things that will detract from the beauty of the Esrog. Sometimes those things will detract to such a point that it actually passes the Esrog. Sometimes it detracts to such a point that it's not possible, but it's not Lechet Chila. So we'll try to focus on a little bit of both. So what are some of the things that could potentially detract from the Esrog to such a degree that it makes it possible? So the Gemara discusses what's called the Chazazis. If the Esrog has like a blister, like a pimple or something on it, so that could potentially disqualify the Esrog. But the Gemara discusses if it has what's called Shini Mare. If it has a color change, so that could also potentially disqualify the Esrog. How much of these Chazazis, how much of these Shini Mares can potentially pass with the Esrog? The Gemara says depends where the problem is. If it's on the top of the Esrog, on the top third of the Esrog, that's considered to be much more chomer, because that's the part that people usually look at. Holding an Esrog, half the Esrog is covered in your hands, but the part that they're looking at is usually the top that catches your attention. So since these dinim are all a function of hadar, that they don't look pretty, so therefore the halach is keveya, that if it's in an area of the Esrog that's more visible, then even the smallest amount is going to be a problem. What do we mean the smallest amount? Let's say there's a mamashep, a tiny microscopic speck on it. So that doesn't pass on the Esrog. So Poskim say that even if it's something that's visible, it's not something that's visible to the eye at a normal distance. It's something you have to take off your glasses and hold it up to the light, and then all I see there's a little something on it. So that's garnish, that's nothing. It has to be something that I'm holding it like I would hold to shake the Lubin Esrog, and I have this spot that's staring me in the face. I have this blister on the Esrog that's staring me in the face. That's considered to be a problem. So if it's at the top part of the Esrog and it's big enough to be able to see normally at a normal distance, that could potentially disqualify the Esrog. What if it's on the lower part of the Esrog? Then the Gemara says that it depends. Depends how many places it is. If it's just one little spot, that's nothing. If it starts to be a few spots, so that could also be a problem. Is any of this relevant for us? Most of us don't have chazazis. We don't have these things in our Esrog. No one's going to buy an Esrog with a big blister or a big something on it. Do we ever have an issue of Shini Mara? So the post can say that 99.99% of the time, what people think of Shini Mara is not Shini Mara. Shini Mara is usually just dirt. In theory, it says in Halacha that if you have a black spot on the Esrog, so that's a problem. So a black spot means the Esrog is mamish turning black. That means there's something wrong with the Esrog. If you have these little dirt spots on it, that's Shini Mara. You just take it off the dirt. So you don't want to start to play around with the dirt, because if you start to play around with the dirt, you may cause a bigger problem, because there's a din of Esrog, a chaser is possible. Even if the smallest amount of the Esrog is missing, that could potentially disqualify the Esrog. So the guy's going to want to make his Esrog look nice and clean. He's going to start scraping away the dirt. He's going to scrape away from the Esrog itself. So he may cause more problems. So if it's just dirt, so then it's okay. So how can you tell if it's dirt? Not usually, if it's not raised above the level of the Esrog, it just looks like a piece of schmutz. So those are usually okay. Lechet chila, just try to have a nice clean Esrog. The nicer it is, the cleaner it is, the more mahudra it is. But to start passing Esrogim because they have little dots of dirt on them, so that doesn't really make any sense. The din is that not only does an Esrog have to be a hadar, but an Esrog can't be missing something either. We said before, it can't be a chaser. So sometimes you have certain psulim and Esrog that are not clear which category they fall under. We're not sure. We know it's puzzle. We're not sure why it's puzzle. We're not sure because it's lacking hiddur. We're not sure because it's lacking part of the Esrog itself. So that's the din that appears in Masechah Sukkah about the pitum. So the Gemara says that if the pitum falls off, so that's a problem. But it's unclear in the Gemara why that should be a problem. Why is a pitum falling off disqualify the Esrog? So some of the Rishonim say it disqualifies the Esrog because it's considered to be a chaser. The pitum is considered to be a part of the Gufa Esrog. and if part of the esrog is missing, so it's puzzle. And other rishonim say, nah, that's not, the pitum's not considered to be part of the esrog. The pitum's considered to be separate, that's what it's actually grew from, it's not part of the esrog proper. No, I said, why does the Mishnah say that it's puzzle? Because it doesn't look nice. It doesn't look right. The whole top of the esrog got broken off. It's not technically chaser, but it's still chisar of hadar. Does it make a difference whether it's possible as a hadar, it's possible as a chaser? So it does make a difference. On the first day, it doesn't make a difference, but on subsequent days, it makes a difference. Because there is a big machlekes that we showed him about whether the psulim of Dal and Minim carry on after the first day. When I say the first day, I mean the first day in Eretz Yisrael, the first 2 days in Chutz Laaretz. But on Chol HaMoed, so the Mishnah says the mitzvah of taking a Luvan Esrog is only midirabbanan. In the Torah, the mitzvah is only the first day. Lekach lechem ayam arishon. And then midirabbanan, you have to take it the rest of the week. Zeichel haMikdash. In the base of Mikdash, there was a mitzvah to take it the whole week, min haTorah. But Chutz LaMikdash today, so it's only midirabbanan. The Gemara says that some of the standards of Luvan Esrog after the first day are lowered. Which standards are lowered? So the Gemara says that the psulim of Chaser don't apply after the first day. The Gemara tells a story about one of the Amoraim used to take a bite out of his Esrog before he would shake a little bit of Esrog after the first day. And that's okay. Chanina would take a little bite out of his Esrog and that would be okay. Even though it was a chaser, that's perfectly alright. And the Gemara doesn't have any problems with that. The only problem the Gemara has is, how can he eat before davening? How can he eat before he shakes a little? That's what the Gemara discusses in Sukkah. How can he have his breakfast before he shakes a little bit of Esrog? That's the whole story of the Gemara. Fine. But in terms of Hilchas Esrog, there's nothing wrong with having a bite out of the Esrog before and after the first day, after the first 2 days, even though it's chaser. So the Rishonim of Machlekes in the beginning of the third paragraph of Maseches Sukkah, Machlekes between Taisus and the Rambam and the Rabban about what's the din of other psulim of Esrog. Let's say the psulim of Hadar. If an Esrog has a Shirimar on it, or an Esrog has a Chazazis on it, would those pose a problem after the first day? So the Rambam and the Rabban say, what's the difference? If Chazal and Masachin, that after the first day, basically everything's kosher, so Chaser is kosher, and Hadar is everything's kosher. And Taisus writes, no, Taisus writes, you can be Mechalik between the two, that Chaser is okay after the first day, and Hadar somehow is more of a problem. So Taisus tries to explain to you why Hadar is more of a problem. Hadar after the first day is more of a problem. So the Ashkenazim followed the Shittas of Taisus. There are more Paskins against the Shekhanot, there are more Paskins like Taisus. So we're Machmir that whatever is possible because of Hadar is a problem even after the first day. Therefore, if the Esrog has a Shirimar, it's possible after the first day. If the Esrog has a pimple, a blister on it, in a way that would disqualify it, it's possible even after the first day. But chaser is takna kosher after the first day. So now the Paskim write, let's say an Esrog loses its pitum after the first day. So if you hold, like the Rambam and the Ramban, that everything's kosher after the first day, good, so everything's kosher. But if you hold like Tosfos, then it's going to depend whether it's chaser or whether it's hadar. If it's a chisaron of chaser, then it'll be okay after the first day. If it's a lack of hadar, then it'll be a problem after the first day. So we pass it like it's a shtickle sveik sveika. And if a person's pitum falls off after the first day, we'll be willing to be make on sveik sveika, because maybe the Rambam and the Ramban are right, that everything's kosher after the first day. And even if Taisus is right, that Hadar is a problem, maybe this is not Hadar, maybe this is the Chisaron of Chaser. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that Migur Adin, you can really make a bracha on a Esrog without a pitum after the first day. Well, the Chetchil, you should try not. Well, if you have another Esrog, you should try to get another Esrog. The Pesach can point out that very often, even if a person drops their Esrog and the pitum falls off, very often a little bit of the pitum is still left behind. So as long as a little bit of the pitum is above the top of the Esrog, that's probably kosher anyway. Could be that's kosher even on the first day. So therefore, or a mikra did, unless the whole pitum falls off, so then after the first day you would be alright. If the entire pitum falls off, now you can see into the esrog, so then the chetchili should try to find another esrog. If you can't, you can make a bracha on your esrog as well. The Gemara says that the esrog has to be completely ripe. If it's a green esrog, so then it's not yaitzeh. It's not considered to be ripe. So there's machlokes in the Gemara. Machlokes in Rishonim and the Paskin. What exactly is the problem? Why is it that if the esrog is green, so it's no good? So one some of the Rishonim write, Taisus writes, the reason is because it's not a Gemara Pri. That's not the egg. The esrog hasn't ripened yet. And the Torah says, pre eats other, it's got to be a pre. Calls man that it's mamash green, just took it off the tree, it's totally not ripe yet. It's not yet called a pre. And the Ran says that that's only one side of the Gemara, but there's another side of the Gemara. The other side of the Gemara is that the color green is the Shini Mara. That just a certain colors, like black, would disqualify the Esrog. So to green would also be a Shini Mara. What's an afkamin ladina between Taisus and Iran? So she's chapter afkamin in the following case. Let's say I have an esrog. I know that it's a gemar pri. I know that's not. I know it's basically ripe already. But lemais, it still has a couple of green spots here and there. So according to Taisus, that would be all right. According to Taisus, green is only possible when it's so green. It's mamish. It's not ripening. It's never going to ripe. It's mamish. This is just a bad esrog. But if it's just got a greens here, or little green spots here and there, why should that be a problem? And Ron writes, no, the Ron writes that anytime you have any green on the esrog, that's like having a black on the esrog, and that can disqualify the entire esrog. So the minig ha'olam is we pass in the kula on this island. The minig has always been, Mishnah Berurah quotes, the minig has always been lahokel, that we assume that as long as the esrog is starting to turn colors a little bit, it's already in the process of turning yellow, even though it's got a little greens here and there, that's not considered to be a lack of a gemar puri. That's already considered to be the fruit is ripe. If it's mamish, absolutely, totally, totally solid green, then one really shouldn't use such an esrog. But as long as it's in the process of turning yellow, that's all right. And the Mishkenos Yaakov was Machmir. Yaakov was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Elosha. So he had a Chumrah that the esrog has to be totally yellow. Shouldn't have any green spots whatsoever. So again, Mikra did, we don't really pass like that. Those who are Machmir for that Mishkenos Yaakov, so you should just be careful, because if you're looking for a really, really yellow esrog, so then try not to get one that's already overripe. If it's already super duper duper yellow, it's already a dark yellow, then it's on the verge of turning brown. It's going to start to turn brown on it. It's going to look even worse than it's supposed to. So if you're looking for a yellow esrog, if you have a lot of time and patience to look for a complete yellow esrog, so then one should try to make sure it's not too overripe, overdone, because then it may not look so nice as sukkah continues. But again, it's a psachom b'yam. If you look at all the pictures and all the gedolim posters, a lot of them are holding green esrogim. But you can't tell whether they're checking the esrogim for other people or whether they're checking for themselves. I don't know. It's not the paskin from a poster.
So the
Rambo writes that even though an esrog without a pitum is possible, that means if the pitum broke off, if the esrog grew that way without a pitum, that's normal. That's some esrogim grow that way. So the esrog dealers have told me, not the esrog dealers, the esrog growers told me that it's a little bit of a mistake. All esrogim grow with the pitum. It has to start to grow with the pitum, because that's where the fruit is fertilized. If it's not a pitum, it's not going to grow. So the teretz is when the poskim write that it grew without a pitum, what that means is that some of the esrogim in the normal course of growing, the pitum falls off. So that's okay. When the esrog started, it had to start with a pitum. But it's normal for it to fall off, and then it kind of grows over itself, so that's okay. When the poskim say that the pitum falls off, that's a problem. It means the esrog's already grown, now the pitum falls off, and now it doesn't grow over it, so now it looks like it's missing something, so that's considered to be a problem. So yesh v'yesh, there are some who like to like esrog with pitums, there are some who dafka mahada not to get esrog with pitums. You get esrog with pitum, then you have to risk it falling and breaking, and some always like to, looks nice, whatever it is. So yesh v'yesh, there's no real mile of one over the other. But if you get an esrog without a pitum, make sure the taka grew without a pitum. It's not something that you can usually tell. It's usually pretty easy to tell whether it grew that way or not. So we move on in terms of some of the lechatchilas in terms of esrog. Up to now, we've been talking about the things that are really problematic.
Well, and the other avamim, is anything in the second day that if they are not perfect, if they're chaser?
Yeah, the same thing. Chaser after the first 2 days is also good. Right, all the dinner of chaser, but it's also not clear what's called chaser, what's called hadar, and some of those also. Then there are some stam hidurim that some people like to have in terms of the esrog, the other way the esrog is shaped, and the esrog is bumpy, and the gartel esrog, whatever. Those are really personal preference. I mean, there are some that are standard objective things. The esrog is supposed to be shaped like a migdol, like a tello, fatter on the bottom, skinnier on the top. It should be fairly bumpy. Those are things that the post can point out are lechatchila. But again, past that, so those are purely in the realm of lechatchila. Move on to the other minim. So we discussed the lulav. So here the lulav, the Gemara tells us that there's one possible psul, a few possible psulim. There's one possible psul in lulav that becomes relevant for us. The Gemara discusses the issue of nechla tiyomis. The Gemara speaks about the tiyomis of the lulav, and if the tiyomis of the lulav splits, that's considered to be a problem. So there's only two things that we don't understand about the Gemara. We're not sure what the tiyomis is, and we're not sure how far it's considered to be splitting. So there's a major machlekes of Rishonim, what in the world tiyomis means. So many of the Rishonim, could be, maybe most of the Rishonim hold, the tiyomis is referring to each of the leaves of the lulav. that it's almost like a twin. Each of the leaves of the lulav are really two leaves that are stuck together. So there are a lot of leaves on the lulav. So if the leaves of the lulav split, that's a problem. How much is considered to be? How many leaves have to split to be a problem? So many of the Rishonim write, if most of the leaves, like Rov, you follow Rov, like all other areas of Halacha, you follow Rov. So if Rov of the leaves of the lulav split, so that could that will disqualify the lulav. So some of the Rishonim say no. Some of the Rishonim have a chumra that when the Gemara speaks about nechkat yomes, it's not talking about a group of leaves. It's talking about one particular leaf. There's one particular double twin leaf that's considered to be the tiyomis. Which is that? So if you hold the shedri, hold the spine of the lulav, and you just follow the spine up, so the leaf that's usually going to come to right in the middle is going to lead to the top of the lulav, that's considered to be the tiyomis, and that has to be intact. And if that leaf splits, so that's a problem. So that's a way of knowing. We try l'chatchila to be knowing for that view, that nechla tiyomis is a problem, even if it's just one of the leaves that splits. How much split is considered to be split? That's a further machlekes in the poskim. So many poskim say, we say that nechla tiyomis means if a rove of the tiyomis is split, if the tiyomis goes all the way down, so you have to figure out how far tiyomis goes, from the top of the lulav till where the spine of the lulav is, so that whole area of the leaf, that whole length of the leaf, if most of that is split, that's considered to be a problem. And other poskim say no, other poskim have a chumra, that even if a small amount of that tiyomis is split, that could also potentially be a problem. So we try the chachila to be cheshish for that. So we have really a chumra gabi chumra when we look for a lulavim. We try to make sure that the lulav isn't split at all. Because if it's split even a little bit, so we're nervous that once it's split a little bit, you shake a little bit, it's going to keep on splitting. So we say it's as if it's already split now. So some. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So it's not the end of the world. This is a chumra gabi chumra. So again, the proper thing, the proper practice is to try to look for a lulav that's completely intact all the way to the top. Let's give a make of that if it's mamashi. You can't get a lulav that's all the way to the top. If it's a little bit on the top, it's nishkefelach. I think the Taz writes a tol tefach. It's less than a tefach. It's nothing. Again, lechatchila, usually, like, if you look hard enough, you usually find a lulav that's all the way to the top. The Magen Avraham quotes that he thinks that the psul of nechlat yomis is also like a shtichel type of a chaser. One could have argued that. One could have said that's like a chlach of hadar. But some of the Magen Avraham says that he thinks it's a chasul across from Rene Ruchem. One of the Rishonim says it's a problem of chaser, and therefore that would follow that after the first day, or after the first 2 days, we wouldn't be so concerned with it. The Gemara speaks about the lulav being straight. That the lulav shouldn't be bent over. So Rishonim have a shaila. What exactly does that mean that the lulav shouldn't be bent over? So most of the Rishonim assume that means that the gufa lulav shouldn't be bent over. It means if the shedra of the spine, the lulav is bent, is broken over, so that's considered to be a problem. What if the lulav is basically straight, just on the very top of the lulav, the leaves are bent over a little bit? So the knepel, we know we have a little bit of the top of the leaves are bent over. Is that considered to be bent over? So the Ritva quotes an opinion that maybe that's also called bent over. So maybe one shouldn't use such a lulav because that may be a chashash of a lulav bent over. So the Rosh writes that he thinks that that's absolutely not right. And not only is that not right, but he thinks, forget, he thinks there's a hiddur to use those lulavim. And I think the Torah quotes from his father, from the Rosh, that he would have to go out of his way to use one of those lulavim, which had the bent over leaves. What's the mila? What's the hiddur of the bent over leaves? So the Rosh writes, it's a practical issue. If it's bent over, then the odds are it's not going to split, because it's the lulav is protecting itself, so that would be better. So you have machlokes rishonim. So minakotz lakotz, so the Ritva quotes, maybe the lulav is no good, and the Rosh says, that's good lechatchila shel lechatchila. So yesh v'yesh. So usually there are different minhagim about this. So a lot of chassidim like to bent over lulavim, like to follow the minhag of the Rosh, and so a lot of the misnagdim, they like to get the straight lulavim. So whatever it is, yesh v'yesh, to both, if you look around long enough, you'll find the split, you don't have to look that long to find a split one. If you look long enough, you'll find a nice bent over one, you'll find a nice one that goes to the top. They're all okay. The first Mishnah in Maseches, in the third paragraph of Sukkah, says that a lulav can't be a yavesh. If a lulav is dried out, so then it's going to be pusel. How dry is considered to be dry? So the Rishonim have machlek is about this also. So Taisus, in the beginning of the third brach of Sukkah, quotes a possibility that it has to be really, really dry in order to be a fossil. It has to be so dry that if you touch it, so the lulav is going to start to brittle, so brittle it's going to start to break into pieces by just merely patching with it a little bit. That's considered to be dry. And most of the Rishonim disagree with that Taisus. Most of the Rishonim, we quote the halacha, the Ravid says that that is once it starts to look like it's no longer alive, maybe it lost its whole greenness, lost its whole color to it, that's a problem. How did the Rav know that's the shear? So Tosis is the shear he got from a Gemara Maseches Bechorah. It's some kind of a din of a mum, of a ozen of a bechor, for some deep dark reason that Esrog and Lulav was compared to the mum and bechor. So Tosis said, how did shear? How did they dug up a Gemara? But the Rav is based on Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, why is that Lulav Yavish's puzzle? Because the Pesach in Tehillim says, Halloha Mesim Yahaluka. So the Rishami says that refers not only to people, but it refers to the minimals. Avi Minim have to be alive and well and fresh. So that's the mokra for Lulav Yavish, the Rav says, based on the Rishami. The Gemara doesn't say it. The Balvik doesn't say that. The Balvik has a different reason. But according to that Rishami, so the Rav says, even though we may not necessarily accept that mokra of Rishami, but at least you see from the Rishami that the shear of Yavish is when it's so dry, that it looks dead. How do you know when it looks dead? So the Rav says, it's like when you see a person. So if you look at a person and you see the mamish lost all their color, if you come to a tzalakol, you see the person is so mamish white. That's a bad sign. So that's what the Rav says also, that if the lulav has lost all of its color, mamish looks like it's dead. So that's considered to be the shear of yavshus. So how do we paskin l'alocha? Do we follow Tosfos? Do we follow the Rav? So the Rama writes that in Eastern Europe they used to follow Tosfos because the Rama writes was such a shasat chach. It was so hard to get lulavim. We know every time it was such a to do. To get the lulav and esrogim, it was impossible. If you were lucky, they got each town got maybe one lulav and esrog. Then they had all kind of kunsim. The Rashbam quotes him of Basra. You have to figure out how it's lochem because you have to own the lulav and esrog. So they would buy it on behalf of the whole community, and then they would be machted to each other. So I would take it for a second. You would take it for a second. He would take it for a second. And each time that when I take it, so I'm cutting the whole thing, and then you take your cut of the whole thing, etc., etc. If you were lucky, maybe the rav in town had a lulav and esrog, but very, very often, so most people did not have their own lulav esrogim. This is an example of a mitzvah that is so changed in the terms of the accessibility for people. It's changed over the years. In the olden days, when Klai Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael, so the Rabban Shom says, "L'kachtem lechem b'yam harishon." It wasn't a multi-million-dollar esrog business. That's the big deal. You go to your backyard, you pluck an esrog off. You go to your backyard, you pull off a dasim. You go down to the river, you take your rabbis. So what's the big deal? So a little bit esrog was such an easy mitzvah to do. Then when Klai Yisrael went into Golus, and no longer an agricultural society, living in cities in Poland, so the mitzvah came almost impossible to fulfill. You had to be such a mesivus nefesh to get a dalad minim. And now Baruch Hashem, now we're back. Even though most of us don't live on farms, but now we have such an easy way of doing the mitzvah. We have this multi-billion-dollar Dalamidim business. I've said it already many times, there are many who love Mr. Regim that the Vulnagon would have plots to have that we wouldn't even take for our kids, as a Chinuch said. I said, because we have so many options. Even in Vilna, how many options did the Gura have? It was kosher, finished. So there are more rights that in Eastern Europe they had mamash no choice. They used to have to rely on shittas atosfos and use a dry lulavim. Sometimes they would have to save the lulavim from year to year because there was no way to do it. As long as it wasn't falling apart in your hands, it was still okay. But the Mishnah Berurah writes that already by the days of the Mishnah Berurah, there was already not quite as thriving as today, but it was already better than it was in the 1500s. Already by the days of the Mishnah Berurah, already the lulav esrogim industry was going pretty well in Eastern Europe. And they were shipping in, they were importing in lulavim. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, why should we rely on this anymore? This is really a dasi yachit. He says, v'shasad chach, what are you going to do? But if you live in a time when you're able to, so then you should attack to get a nice fresh lulav. It should really be green. As long as it's basically fundamentally, has a little bit, some lulav and dry out a little bit, but if it's fundamentally green still, so then it's still okay. There was another tzad l'hokin a little bit, what they used to be is very makel in the lulav ayavesh, because the Gemara says that if you have a shasad chach and there's no other lulav around, so the Gemara says you could take a lulav ayavesh also. Why is that? So the machlekes are showing him in the Rambam and the Ravid. So the Ravid says you're not really yaitzim with the lulav ayavish. It's just that you should take it as a zechel yalma, just to remember dalad minim. You're not really yaitzim with the evid. And the Rambam says no. The Rambam says that you yaitzim with the evid. That if there's no other lulav around, that a lulav ayavish is kosher. How can that be? He says if a lulav ayavish is mamish possible, so how can it be that it's kosher? When there's nothing around, it's kosher. When there are other things around, it's possible. So what kind of thing is it? Let's say I have a sukkah. So if there's no other sukkah around, so then a sukkah with a metal is kosher? That's not true. It's possible. So the Yosemech explains that this psul of Uva Yavish is a little bit of a fluctuating psul. It's based on the dinim of Hadar. Beauty is something which is relative. If everything is ugly, so then the nicest thing is considered to be beautiful. If you have nice luvim around, and then you have a shvach luvim around, so then the halacha says luv yavish is considered to be an ugly luv. It's lacking in hadar. But if everything looks the same way, so everything is beautiful, depending on what your reference point is, that's also considered to be beautiful. So whatever it is, maybe that was the reason why they were very makel in Eastern Europe, at Siruf, that according to Tosfos, it wasn't really yavish yet, because it wasn't falling apart, and also because that was all that was left, so maybe that was considered to be like a shas achach, that the Gemara would say, according to many Rishonim, one could still be yotzei the mitzvah b'di'evet. But again, most of it's not relevant for us. For us, we have Baruch Hashem plenty of green and love him, so why don't you try to get a green little bit again? If it's a little bit of white here and there, it's the shkefelach, but the blue should clearly look like it's green. Yeah, but they're not totally yavish. Usually they're still, even the outer leaves are still green. The poskim say. What? It's not chos. It's not chos. You pull off a leaf of lulav. That's not chos. The next in the minim is hadasim. So there are a few things about hadasim one should be familiar with. The hadasim market has changed also drastically over the last 10 years or so. It used to be most of the time. I remember one particular erev sukkahs that I remember standing with my father, Avshalom, in the Lower East Side in some cellar somewhere. We used to go buying lulav mesrogim and spending 2-3 hours, you know, sifting through hadasim. Why they set 95% of hadasim that were possible, I'm not sure why. In the olden days, 10 years ago, it used to be that you had a mamash look to make sure hadasim or kosher. The hadasim come in the pre-packs. But I'll tell you a secret. You have to check the pre-packs also. They're not always as perfect as they sometimes suggest that they are. So, well, one should just be aware of some of the details of this hadasim also. So one of the dinim of hadasim that's a lot of lumdas about this, but totally irrelevant for us lemaisa at this point, is the dinim of the anovim. If you have hadas with berries on it, so there's a whole sugi in the third break of sukkah about how many berries and what color berries are going to disqualify the hadas. This man is that's not relevant because they take them all off. And when I used to check for hadasim, you had hadasim, which had little berries, little green berries on them. So you have to check, depending on what they are, what color, how many they are, to potentially disqualify the hadas. But today, all the pre-packed hadasim have the berries already been removed. So the Mishnah says you can remove them, it's not a problem. You remove them, then the hadas will become kosher. So why that sugya became so famous? Because it's really a hilchashavah sugya. Because the Mishnah talks about plucking off the hadasim on yontif. Is that considered to be a machabah patish? Not a machabah patish, a davashim miskaven. So all the lumbus of davashim miskaven and psikreishim, we just this week in yeshiva, so we're learning the sugya of, we're up to the malach of chayresh. So we started with zarei and now we're up to chayresh. So in the malach of chayresh, so you have all the sugyas of psikreishim, l'nichaleis. So we spent most of the week talking about the sugya in Masechah Sukkah, so it was good timing, but it's not really a sukkah sugya, it's really more, it's not dalaminim sugya, it's really more of Hilchos Shabbos and Yontif sugya. But in terms of practically for us, the berries usually are not there anyway, so we're not going to spend too much time on that. But the halacha that is most important for us in terms of hadasim is that is the fact that the Torah describes hadasim as being enough eight avos. Avos means that it's an interlocking chain type of a look, and therefore hadasim is called the hadas meshulash. You have to have three leaves coming out of the same area in order for it to be labeled as a hadas. What if you have a hadas that doesn't look that way? What if you have two leaves over here and one leaf coming out on the bottom, and two leaves over here and one leaf on the top? So that doesn't look right. Doesn't have that interlocking chain. So the Gemara calls that a hadas shoyte. So why is it called a hadas shoyte? So the pashup shot is because it's a foolish hadas. It's trying to trick us. It's a silly, we're ranking out the hadas. So some say that it's a mistake. It's not supposed to say shot, it's supposed to say hishika. It's supposed to say shin tes hey instead of shin vav tes hey. What's the difference between a hadas shoyte means like a shoyte, like a shoyte. And what's a shita? So hadas shita barosh tatar. The Gemara says in the second part of Rosh Hashanah that a shita means just a branch. It means it's a branch bialma. So we say to the hadas, you fool it. You know, we don't call it a foolish hadas. We say, you're hadashita. You're just a simple branch, not a hadas. You're a branch bialma. So it's not that we're ranking out on the intellectual level of the hadas. We're just calling it a branch. So whatever the rank out against this hadas is, the bottom line is it's no good. Whether it's hadashot or hadashita, it's possible. So the Ramah quotes a practice that also existed in Eastern Europe that they used to use. They couldn't get hadasim, regular hadasim that were mishulosh. So they used to use hadasim that were that had two leaves coming out on the same level. There was no third leaf. It was just two leaves and then two leaves and two leaves and two leaves. So the Ramah quotes some who say that was kosher. Why was that kosher? Why is that different? So the Ramah tries, in the documentary, it's really, really hard to defend the practice. Why maybe that's okay? Maybe the Gemara only disqualified it when it's two and one. If it's just two, maybe somehow that's better. And the Ramah tries other reasons to explain away where this minute came from to use them. And then the Ramah writes, what are you going to do? There's no other, you can't get hadasim. And in Krakow, they weren't growing hadasim in the middle of October. So he writes, this was the best that we had. So maybe b'shas al-chak, according to some opinions, these hadasim would be kosher. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that if you're doing Krakow in the 1500s, you don't have anything else. So you have to rely on the Das Yochids, and maybe such a hadas would be kosher. But we don't pass like that. Mishnah Berurah says that b'zman hazeh baruch Hashem, we're able to get hadasim, so we have to get kosher hadasim, and they have to be mishuloshim. They have to be the three leaves have to come out on the same level in order to be a hadas mishulosh kedas uchadin. How much of the hadas has to be mishulosh in order for it to be kosher? So the poskim say lechatchila. So the entire shear of the hadas should be mishulosh. If you have a tremendous hadas that's 3 feet long, so the whole thing doesn't have to be mishulosh because you only really need 3 tefachim anyway of the hadas. So as long as 3 tefachim of the hadas is mishulosh, that's kosher lechatchila shel lechatchila. What if you don't even have 3 tefachim? That's mishulosh. So the Ravid writes, if you have a rove of 3 tefachim, that's also considered to be okay. And then the poskim discuss about that. Let's say you don't have rove of that in one place. You have a little bit over here, a little bit over here, a little bit over here. Maybe that's also good. You can start to chip away at the 3 tefachim. But again, the three tefachim of hadas should really be mishulosh. The rishonim have a shaila whether it should be mishulosh dafka on the top of the hadas or anywhere in the hadas is also okay. Mikra din ripaska, as long as there's any area of 3 tefachim, a row 3 tefachim mishulosh, mikra din it's really okay. So again, lechatchila, once you look for hadas that's kulo mishulosh. So if you pay for the extra couple of dollars, so you get what they claim to be the kulo mishuloshim, I would recommend to take a look at it before. Don't wake up Sukkot morning and start checking hadasim because you may be in for an unpleasant surprise. You should take a look beforehand and see that that they're actually really are mishuloshim, and lechatchila they should be kulo mishulosh. Sugalefs. Now they have Aleph Plus. They have all kind of different Hidurim. Nobody wants to buy Bays anymore, so everyone buys Aleph. Now it's Aleph Plus. So whatever it is, try to look. The best thing to do for the extra few dollars is to buy the Kula Mishulosh. But again, Mikra Din, as long as we're over the Hadas and Mishulosh, so Mikra Din, the Hadas would still be kosher. How many Hadas are we supposed to have? So you spell, the Gemara says that a minimum of 3 Hadas, it's actually Machlek Yisatanoi. One time it says 1 Hadas is good enough. We are knowing that you have to have a minimum of 3 Hadasim. What if you want to add on more Hadasim to that? So the Rambam says you're allowed to do that. The Rambam says to add on a second lulav, that's baltoisiv. To take two esrogim, that's baltoisiv. But to add on more hadasim, that's okay. Why is that okay? So the Rambam writes, because that's mishum noi. Having more hadasim looks nicer. The guy walks to shul holding two esrogim, the guy looks foolish. But he walks in with a big batch of hadasim, so it looks beautiful. Yeah, it's like a nice bouquet. It's a more expensive bouquet of flowers. So that's considered to be mitorah sahidur, not considered to be baltoisiv. The Rambam has a klal that whenever you're being quote unquote mosif to be mahadras a mitzvah, that's not baltoisiv. Baltoisiv is, I'm trying to add on to the mitzvah because I'm trying to change the mitzvah. Here, I'm not changing the mitzvah. I'm saying the mitzvah is to read, but I want to make it more mahudr. And not everybody agrees to this Rambam. So the archaeologists have dug up the coins from the Bar Kokhba times, other times, from the period of Bais Sheni, or immediately post Bais Sheni, and there are pictures of coins in the back of the coin where they have the image of a Dalad Minim, and they're clearly following the Rambam Shita. You see, there's a lulav of Estrog Arabis, and you see a big, big batch of Hadassim, much, much more than 3 Hadassim there. So that's the view that the Rambam is quoting. Maybe not everybody followed that. Maybe there were Tanoim, well, that was no good. But we don't really have any discussion in the Gemara about this. So you have a Machlekes Rishonim about this. The Chasam Sofer quotes this Rambam in Hilchos Brichas Kohanim, where the Chasam Sofer writes that you see from this Rambam that whenever you're adding on to something in order to be Mahadras and Mitzvah, that's not called Baltoisif. So he says that's the Pshat in the Ramah, the beginning of Siman Kuchav Ches and Brichas Kohanim. The Ramah writes that even though the Gemara says in Ksubas that a non-Kohen is not allowed to get up to Duchen, the Ramah writes he thinks that's only if he gets up by himself. But if you have 10 Kohanim getting up, and now you have a couple of Yisraelim who have nothing else to do, they want to join in Duchen also, so the Ramah writes, that's okay. Why is that okay? So the Chassam Sofer writes, he thinks it's like this. If you have a Yisrael gets up on his own, he's adding on to the mitzvah. The Torah says Kohanim, Duchen, not Yisraelim. But if you have 10 Kohanim, and the Yisrael joins, why is the Yisrael joining? So the Chassam Sofer says he's joining because the Kohanim are all off key. So they're not singing nicely. So the Yisrael wants to help them out a little bit. So that's a hidden mitzvah for the Kohanim to sing nicely. So in order to help the Kohanim, so the Yisrael can go up in Duchen also. So the Chassam Sofer says, I adding on to the mitzvah. So he quotes the Rambam Menuchas Lulav. He says, no, that's not called adding on to the mitzvah because you're doing it for Torah's hinder. It's not considered to be an addition. It's an interesting dimyon, but whatever. As I state in Chassam Sofer, at the beginning of Bechus Kani. In terms of the last of the Minim, the last of the Minim is the Aravas. Are any things we have to be careful about in terms of the Aravas? So there are two things that one should be careful about Aravas. Number one, if a lot of the Aravas start to fall off, so that's going to be a problem. So as long as if you have rova, the leaves are still on, that's okay. If the Yavel Chachish trying to look nice, it's possible. But if rova, the leaves already fell off, that's already considered to be a problem. Also, the halacha is that Arava becomes Yavesh, that's also a problem. How Yavesh is an Arava? So the Poskim say, once the Arava loses its whole green color, that's already considered to be a Yavesh. So those leaves that totally lose their greenness are considered to be no longer here. That's something you have to be careful about. A lot of people towards the end of Sukkot can run into real problems of Aravas that are drying up. So one should, we live in a place where you can always get more Aravas, one should try to probably switch Aravas. This year's probably a good time to switch. You have the Shabbos, so you have for the whole week of Chol HaMoed to be able to get a new set of Aravas, that way you don't have to worry about anything in terms of Yavish. But again, Mikra Din, if the Aravas still have a little bit of greenness to them, so even though they're starting to turn a little blackish, but each leaf has a little bit of green to it, so then it's not technically considered to be a Yavish yet. And even if you have a few leaves that are Yavish, as long as it's still most of the leaves are okay, then it would be all right. One should also be careful in terms of the Arava, that the top of the Arava is not cut off. Sometimes that happens, that the top of the Arava, the stem itself, is sometimes cut off. That could be a problem. The top of the hadas may not be a problem because the hadas is covered over with the leaves. That's a further shaila. L'chatchila, one should be careful in that also. And the top of the lulav also should be careful that everything is intact all the way on top. It shouldn't be a potential problem. But the aravah that sometimes happens that the top of the aravah breaks off. So one should be careful about that. Right? So again, we didn't get a chance to cover all of the alaminim, but hopefully some of the highlights of things to be careful. Inshallah.